Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Thanks to everyone who supports Daily Tech News Show directly. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/supports.
This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, November 5th, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Roger Chang from somewhere on the fringes of the LA County area.
He's our producer. Joining us today, David Spark from Spark Media Solutions and co-host of the CISO Security Vendor Relationship podcast and series. Welcome back to the show, David. Good to have you, man.
It is great to be back. Great back. Pretty much it's a kind of also the ZDTV Tech TV reunion.
Yeah, right. Well. That's true. We all were Tech TV employees at one time. So it's fun. It was fun. A little fun reminiscing going on in the pre-show. If you're a patron, you can check that out. We're going to talk with David a little bit about some of the cool stories he's got going on in the chief information security officer space. Things like using open source to market instead of spending on ads. But let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Verizon is reorging into three divisions: consumer, media, and business. Now, network IT and corporate functions will be centralized to serve all three new divisions. The consumer group will include consumer wireless, wired, and wholesale service. The business group will handle business wireless and wired, as well as things like enterprise, Internet of Things, telematics, and edge computing. And the media group will include content outlets like Yahoo, TechCrunch, and the Huffington Post, as well as the advertising operations. The oath name for this division will be phased out.
Oh, we hardly knew ye. Barnes & Noble.
By the way, when I read that, I was like, oh, yeah, oath. It was like one more of those. Yeah, I completely forgot they did that. Now there's no point in me remembering that.
Barnes & Noble released a Nook-branded 10.1-inch Android tablet. It has 32 gigabytes of onboard storage and a 1920 by 2000 display with 224 pixels per inch. Goes on sale November 14th for $130. I know some people are asking about cheap 10-inch tablets. There you go.
Nikkei reports its sources say Apple told its manufacturing partners not to increase iPhone XR production lines from 45 to 60. Now, you might say, what do those numbers mean? Well, the increase would have added 100,000 iPhone XR units per day. The same sources say that Apple increased orders for iPhone 8 and 8 Plus units by 5 million. Hmm.
And Intel announced its 14-nanometer Xeon Cascade Lake server processors. Current Xeon processors have about 28 cores on a single die. Not about, just exactly 28 cores. The Cascade Lake series will have 48 cores on multiple dies in a single socket, similar to AMD's EPYC line. Two of these Cascade Lake chips could be installed on a motherboard to give you 96 cores total and can accept up to 24 DDR4 RAM modules. That means you can get up to 3 terabytes of RAM, or use Intel's Optane chips and you could have 12 terabytes of system memory. Intel claims Cascade Lake performs 20% better than previous Xeons and 3.4% better than AMD's EPYC for certain tasks. However, AMD is expected to announce new 7-nanometer EPYC chips on Tuesday. All right, let's talk a little bit more about the reviews coming in for the iPad Pro.
The new iPad Pro from Apple, the reviews have been published because embargoes have been lifted Monday. It was a plethora of them. And results somewhat mixed, overall positive. So we'll highlight a few of the main points. The new design and slimmer bezels got pretty high marks across the board, as did the liquid retina LCD display, which many a publication said was, you know, the best iPad display ever. The Apple Pencil 2.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
Mostly applauded, whereas the Washington Post said, quote, $130 Apple Pencil stylus available since the original. Also joined in the makeover an artist friend who drew me a quick illustration on the new Pro with an app called Procreate, raved about its increased responsiveness. Of the reviews, there were some gripes about Face ID when holding the device, but TechRadar said, quote, the good news is that the iPad Pro 11 does indeed possess a half-decent camera on the back with a 12-megapixel sensor capable of taking more than acceptable low-light photos with rich enough detail when zoomed in. The larger display does make a good viewfinder, and if you're doing something scientific or technical, you'll have some good quality visual data to work with. That was something that besides the sort of ha-ha, someone's taking a photo with their iPad at a concert type thing, that the cameras were not totally up to snuff with smartphone cameras. So it sounds like if you're going to be using an iPad Pro for this reason, then that's, you know, it's good to have a camera that is actually in the mix with the best of the best.
The big question everybody wants to know is if this really is good as a laptop replacement. And most of these reviews said that the processor was snappy. You could switch back and forth between apps really well. But the big downside is you're still in iOS. You still got a mobile browser. Sometimes when you click on links, it opens an app, which isn't ideal in a PC situation. And a lot of reviewers mentioned that they still needed to go to an actual PC to do certain things, especially in a work environment. I mean, David, what do you make of all these different iPad Pro reviews? Or what do you think of the iPad Pro?
Well... My first response was the comment about the stylus, but I'm also interested in talking about the sort of computer replacement. One is that, you know, this $130 stylus, as I understand, the new one does not work with version one, and the version one stylus does not work with the current one. And just this pattern of, oh, by the way, that thing you bought very recently, it's now obsolete. I get a sense there's this like dominatrix and submissive quality between Apple and its customers, as in you're going to buy this $130 stylus and you're going to love it, whether you like it or not, kind of thing. And they're going to, you know, they're going to be irritated by it, but they're going to say, thank you. We love it regardless, you know, because of sort of the relationship that's been built with Apple. So that was my kind of first take of that.
But that's not unlike a new iPad just having a really cool feature that older iPads don't support. It just happens to be something that's separate from the unit itself.
It's a physical device, a digital device. So it's just my attitude is whatever the cost of this thing is, just add $130. You know, that it shouldn't be a cost without that price because you can't really use this thing without the stylus. So there's really no point. What?
No, no, you could totally use a tablet without a stylus. I don't use.
Oh, no, but for this one in particular, why someone would be getting this one?
You get the keyboard, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Okay.
Yeah.
But the other thing is about the issue of desktop replacement. I think the problem we keep having this topic or notebook replacement, any way you want to put it, is we keep having this discussion. I mean, this is not the first time we've had the discussion is, does this thing replace the desktop? It's because we want this device to act like the desktop rather than us changing our work behavior for this smaller device or this more limited device or this device that behaves differently, like opening up apps. And, you know, I'm always surprised. You must know Harry McCracken. Mm-hmm. Yes, you probably had Harry on the show before. He actually stopped using a notebook computer a while ago and does almost all of his work on an iPad, which I was kind of stunned by, but he prefers to work like that. So my feeling is a lot of the quote desktop replacement discussion really should be about, do you want to change rather than does the device have to change for you?
I don't know, man. A Windows 10 or a Chrome OS tablet can take a mouse and I can do a lot of the stuff and not have to change. So why can't the iPad do that too?
David should be on our follow-up to, are we in a post-PC era discussion?
Yeah, right.
On a later show.
Chrome 71 is going to block all ads on sites that consistently show abusive ads. By abusive ads, it's things like fake system messages, automatically redirecting you to another page, trying to take your personal info, like pretty serious stuff. If an abusive ad is reported, a site will be given 30 days to clean it up before all the ads are blocked. Users of Chrome can also turn the filtering off if they wish. The only downside here, I guess, is, you know, it's Google deciding which sites don't get to show ads in Chrome. And they've got a pretty dominant position with Chrome right now. That doesn't sound like anybody has a problem with that.
No. I would like these ads blocked, and I use Chrome, so good on you.
Yeah, and honestly,
don't you remember the number? I mean, it doesn't happen nearly to the level it happens. You know, it used to happen a lot earlier, but the amount of viruses that would used to come through ads was horrific.
Yeah.
And that was truly awful before, and it's not nearly to the level that it used to be.
Well, and as much as you can criticize Google for having a stranglehold on the advertising market in many ways, I don't think this is one of them. I don't think this is your best argument against Google, because they don't tend to abuse this privilege. They do tend to only really shut down sites that need it. But we'll see. Maybe this will be the exception and we'll get a lot of fake false positives and people complaining.
Let's talk about robots. LG Robotics is developing a smart shopping cart that can follow customers through Korea's largest supermarket chain, which is called E-Mart. The cart will include a barcode scanner and display to show your shopping list, as well as leading you to items that you might be looking for. E-Mart launched a store without cashiers in the Gangnam district of Seoul back in August. No date on when the smart shopping carts might arrive in stores, but it's an interesting idea, isn't it?
I like the comment in the story. They said that it's for people who are too lazy.
Well, too lazy? No.
So not all. No, some too lazy, but they also mentioned the elderly too. Of course, which totally made sense.
Well, that's somebody's got a kid in there.
Just taking something
the
gadget.
There are lots of reasons that a cart might be, you know, it'd be nice to have both hands free.
You're just taking something the Engadget author came up with. That's not endemic to this, right? I mean, but
that amused me regardless that laziness would be a sale point. You know, you can be lazy and go shopping, although shopping is an active thing. Yeah, I mean, once you have multiple children and you're trying to manage them, yes, I think after, you know, one or two kids is manageable shopping. If you're a parent with three plus children and you have to shop, that becomes pretty tough.
Well, and I've not been in an E-Mart myself, but what if a lot of the shopping experience has to do with looking at a smartphone to figure out what's going to go on your list, right? So the shopping cart that follows you and doesn't get lost frees you up to do a little bit more of that, if that's actually going to end up into cost savings for you in the long run.
I also didn't get a chance to go in an E-Mart when I've been in Seoul, and I don't know how big their aisles are, but I know that most of the stores that I was in Korea had normal or small aisles. And so having shopped with a good old-fashioned manual cart, the dance you have to do to get past people in aisles seems like it would be much more complicated. You're going to need a lot more machine learning for these e-carts to really understand, like, when to go past the lady that's shopping the chocolate chips.
And, yeah. Self-driving shopping carts.
Yeah.
The ethics of it all.
Yeah. When does it really follow you? When does it hit somebody? I don't know. This is more complicated than it looks.
Can I throw up, because you mentioned something, so I want to throw out a product recommendation. I don't know if you know of this app, an app called Our Groceries. Do you know this app?
No,
yeah,
I use
that app. Yeah.
You're familiar? Do you use it with your wife? Yes?
Well,
let's hope so.
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
No.
You share an account. You share a shopping list.
So yes. The idea is you share a shopping list.
Right.
And the idea is it's great because what it'll do is if myself or my wife are going out shopping, one of us will say, I'm going shopping, add whatever you want to the list, and you add it to Our Groceries, and it automatically pops up.
Yeah.
And you can just press a button as you're collecting everything at the market. But what's great is you don't have to manually enter everything, because we usually end up buying the same things over and over again. So you can just see on your list, you know, milk, eggs, boom, 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 boom. You add it to your list, and then you can take it off.
The reason I hesitated, we use it hooked up with the Amazon Echo, right? So you can just tell Amazon to put it on your list. It's great. I tell Eileen, just if you have anything to put on the list, just tell the Echo. You don't even have to tell me. You don't even have to open the app. She still doesn't do it. She just tells me.
Well, I personally don't have any of those listening devices in my home because I don't like to voluntarily bug my own house. Mm. So I've steered far away from those.
You're unfamiliar with the vetted recording of the Amazon Echo. I get it. As BlizzCon this weekend, Blizzard announced a mobile version of Diablo called Diablo Immortal. Blizzard promises a constantly evolving world and the chance to meet and socialize with other players taking part in events alongside a classic Diablo-style gameplay set somewhere between Diablo 2 and Diablo 3. If you have no other context, that probably sounds to you like a perfectly normal game announcement and you wonder why it's here in the show. Well, the trailer has generated hundreds of thousands of dislikes, accusations that Blizzard was resetting comments and like counts, accusations that Blizzard is out of touch with its own gamers. There were some boos at BlizzCon. An ex-Blizzard employee and Diablo 2 developer Mark Kern blamed the backlash on how Blizzard teased and revealed the game, not on the game itself. Kern said the game's fine, but he said Blizzard used to understand that its base was PC gamers, and they led people to believe that they were going to get Diablo 4 for the PC, and when they announced a mobile game that isn't even coming to the PC, people got upset. Really upset.
Well, and were they right to do that? Because it wasn't as if Blizzard was like, here's Diablo 4, the worst PC game ever. It was something completely different.
Right.
I mean, but we're talking about, you know, it's like a two different OS type of situation. So, you know, is the Blizzard community right in their fury here?
Well, this also sounds like a corporate decision of, we want to force the community onto mobile because we want to build probably more on the mobile. And there's going to be a point of pain. This definitely sounds like that point of pain. And people don't like change. I mean, that's something we've seen repeated many times in history. So people also have short memories. So my feeling is this community that booed it, that are still Diablo fans, will still play this game. The question is, will they evolve from a PC to a tablet / mobile device player? We'll have to wait and see.
I think it's specifically that Blizzard said, we're going to have news about Diablo. Then a couple of days before the show, they tried to play it down and say, it's not going to be the news you guys really are excited about. Don't, you know, it's going to be some news, but they didn't want to undercut their own announcement, so that it was a little bit hard to tell what they meant. And then a bunch of people who wanted like a tease to Diablo 4, right, for the PC, got a mobile game. And I don't even know if it's about expecting people to move platforms as much as it is they made something for fans of one platform, but all the fans of the other platform were the ones in the audience.
Not in a post-PC era, say Diablo fans.
I think Scott Johnson has summarized this with a comic that he posted on Twitter. Diablo purists and the Venn diagram of mobile gamers intersect in a very small area, basically. That's what we're seeing here.
You know, mark this point in time. We're in November 5th. The question is, will Blizzard be successful in making that shift away from PC gaming onto mobile, which appears what they're trying to do here? Well,
they've been extremely successful with Hearthstone on mobile. It'll be interesting to see if they're successful with Diablo Immortal, if the silent majority of mobile people make this a success.
Well, we haven't talked about Amazon in this show yet, so now is the time. Sources tell the Wall Street Journal that Amazon is focusing on Crystal City, Virginia, or Dallas, or New York as locations for its second headquarters, HQ2, as it's being called. Although none of the 20 other cities that were under consideration have actually been totally ruled out as of yet. The Wall Street Journal reported later Monday that Amazon plans to split its second HQ between two cities, which would mean a second and third headquarters. 25,000 employees would work at each location. So this is a big deal. You know, for those of us whose cities are not in consideration, you're like, I don't know, I just pick a city. But for, you know, workforces in the area, it is a big deal for not just adding a lot of jobs, but what would go into any neighborhood that surrounds this.
Well, I thought it was also interesting with the discussion of the real estate developers either developing or holding off sales, you know, in the hopes that if Amazon comes in, then it's going to be, you know, a giant windfall for them. You know, that's a very, very risky gamble, but maybe they've got some inside dirt that we don't have.
I want to give credit to Rich Stroffolino, who in our producer's Slack for the show said that with Amazon splitting the headquarters, whichever city says, no, we won't want it split, you go ahead and take the headquarters, will obviously be the true headquarters. Because it's Solomonic, split the baby. We'll explain
right.
later.
Yeah.
Folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. Let's talk about some of the stories that David's been telling at CISOseries.com, that's CISOseries.com, starting with a company that has decided, instead of spending money on traditional marketing, to do their marketing by contributing, like legitimately contributing code to open source projects.
Yeah, so this was the story of a guy by the name of Jeff Williams, who had two security companies, both in the application security space, one called Aspect Security, and that got sold to EY, and then his new company, Contrast Security, which is more a product-based application security company. And when he was with Aspect, that's when the application security market was just starting to grow. And at that time, the consortium OWASP, which was the Open Web Application Security Project, had started. And his organization started, you know, the first thing that they did was they provided the application WebGoat, which is this application that's designed to be essentially abused as you're testing the security of an application.
Like a scapegoat, yeah.
And then they also created something called OWASP 10, which is the sort of top 10 security protocols that you should have in place when you're setting up an application, which is similar to the SANS top 20. They got the idea from that. But again, both of these were things that they did for the open source community. And through that work, and by the way, did a lot of other things that were not successful in the open source community. But those two in particular really got them an enormous amount of attention in the community. So when he went to his new company, he kind of put that thing aside, or that sort of that behavior aside, and started to do traditional marketing, but realized how incredibly difficult that is to do in an incredibly crowded space. And so he decided to go back, and they did do some open source stuff. But then one of the things that they did is they actually released a completely free version of their security product, but just for one application to the community. And as a result, they are able, because people are using the free version, they're able to, you know, bubble them up to their enterprise version, you know, kind of the freemium model. But the free version is not limited. It's just it's limited in that it only works on one application, but it doesn't limit, you know, by time features or anything, or have certain features crippled. that has allowed him to sell faster. We're in an industry where the sales cycle is so long, and more importantly, just get kudos from the community as a result. And that's been, that is one thing that the people in the security industry have a lot of trouble with, is trying to get, build trust, because that becomes critical in security sales.
Well, and there's so many, there's so much good research about the, you know, the security of an open source platform, because you got more eyes on it. Does he talk about getting any benefits from that as well? Just having more users, making it a little more bulletproof?
Well, one of the things he said, he didn't talk necessarily about that, but one of the things that he talked about is that the fact that people who used his products, or like the WebGoat, said that WebGoat was the reason I got into application security. So that, you know, the fact that there's sort of this warmth towards him and his company as a result of that. And then the other issue is just, you know, the fact that they were, you know, their name just got around a lot more. They didn't try to distribute it under their own brand name. They made it a product for the community with their name as just kind of a footnote into the development. But that's in that respect. But it's interesting. I just recorded my most recent episode of the podcast, and the guest there, a guy by the name of Richard Syerson, who is a former CISO of Lending Club, he made a comment about open source. He goes, if you are going to contribute to open source, and I felt this was a very critical comment, is you must commit to open source, because if you put something out there in open source and either remove it from open source or fail to continue to support it, the community is going to start hating you.
Yeah. No, there's an authenticity to open source that is required. And you really need to be doing it for the right reasons. A positive marketing boost may be a side benefit, and it may be one of the reasons you decide to do it, but it can't be the only one, right?
No, you know, one of the things Jeff said, he goes, we just want to make it clear to the community that we're passionate about this space.
Yeah, yeah.
And he felt that he would get a good marketing boost. He just noticed that the effort that he was spending in traditional marketing was having less and less effect.
Yeah, there's some really interesting stories that you're telling on CISO Series, and I know not everybody's into the security, the vendor space, but it might translate across different sectors here. One is an article you did and an interview you did with Alan Alford of Meetel about deciding to try to bridge the gap between vendors and the people who buy their products who just don't want to hear from them by, what did he do? He like set aside some like office hours, it sounded like.
He set up office hours. Yeah. So his plan was, and by the way, I can't underestimate, or I can't overestimate, I'm sorry, what a big deal this announcement was. He said, I'm going to set aside 2 hours every week to talk with vendors. The fact that a CISO, and he's the CISO of Meetel, the fact that a CISO was proactively saying, I want to talk to vendors, when pretty much the rest of them just say, get away from me, was such a huge deal. It was totally explosive in the marketplace. I mean, it really was a big, big deal. It turns out that he spent even more time, because he actually had a budget planning was coming up. Mm-hmm. And so he actually ended up spending 10 hours a week for a period of 4 weeks.
Oh, wow.
But what he said, and this is the part that I thought was very, very powerful. Most CISOs, when they're looking for a new product, will go and talk to other CISOs. The problem is you get yourself into a bubble. And everyone's just using the kind of the same products, and it goes, oh, yeah, I like that. I like this person, whatever. But at some point, someone new has to break in, because there's constantly new solutions coming up. And it either requires a CISO to go out, or someone successfully penetrate, someone to go out, do that education, and then come in and tell all the other CISOs. Well, the chances of your timing of finding all that information is very difficult if you're not the CISO who does that. So you got to be the CISO who does that. And that's what Alan wanted to do. And he felt this was critical. Yes, he could have chosen not to do it, talked to his CISO buddies, and built a plan based on what is already out there, what is kind of already known. But he wanted to build even a greater plan, and he wanted it a sort of a greater education. That's why he forced himself to let vendors educate him. And he felt, you know, he's better for it, and his company's better for it as well.
He was the change he wanted to see in CISOs. That's great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on other stories and make it into either here or Daily Tech Headlines. Do it at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Very active community there. Also active community on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/Daily Tech News Show. All right, let's kick it off with amateur traveler Chris Christensen, who has a follow-up to using credit cards for travel.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. First, a heads up, I suggested using a one-time use credit card for buying airline tickets, and some of the smart listeners of your show have told me they have run into issues or known people who run into issues where some airlines, and I've never run into this, ask to see the credit card you book something with, or at least ask for the credit card number, which seems like it's going to get you into all sorts of troubles when you're buying something for your adult children, as I've been known to do. But apparently it happens in some places. So good to know. Yeah. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
Ah, good follow-up. Thank you, Chris. Let's check out the mailbag. What kind of emails are we getting here, Sarah?
Oh, thanks for asking, Tom. Mike, a.k.a. Gadget Chaser, weighed in on our story last week about tablet sales slowing and why that might be. Mike says, it's my opinion that the reason sales are declining all this time is that the manufacturers don't take the category seriously. They don't produce compelling devices, which leads to declined sales, proving that they don't need to put any more effort into the category. It's a self-licking ice cream cone. That's a good one, Mike. I hadn't heard that one before. Mike goes on to say, for me, I can't find a device that suits my needs. My current tablet is an NVIDIA Shield second gen. It's getting a little long in the tooth, and although I appreciate NVIDIA continuing to keep up with the latest version of Android on Shield devices, the 2+ years old hardware can't keep up with it. I'd love to get a new tablet. Can't find a decent device to buy. It's impossible to find a quality vanilla Android 7 or 8 inch tablet. Why can't I get one with at least 4 gigs of RAM and running vanilla Oreo or Gasp Pi even? Very frustrating. I suppose we'll have to make a compromise at some point, but I won't be happy about it. Have I mentioned it's frustrating?
Yes, he has. You know, we had that Nook announcement, but that's a 10 inch. It's as we talked about, tablets really moving towards being PC replacements means this other niche market of people who wanted 7 or 8 inch tablets is kind of drying up. And it's one of those things where your market isn't, there's not enough people like you that is causing people to want to make this. But if you've got recommendations for 7 or 8 inch tablets, send it to us, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com.
Thanks for all your feedback. And thanks to also David Spark for being on the show with us today. David, so nice to see you. It's been a while since you and I were on a show together anyway. Tell folks where they can keep up with everything that you're up to.
Number one, I would just go, especially if you're in the security space, please go to CISOSeries.com, subscribe to the podcast, and subscribe to the newsletter as well. You see it's up there in the upper right-hand corner. And my regular business is SparkMediaSolutions.com. If you're big tech company interested in learning more about that. And then also I would just say, if you're in Southern California, I'm doing a great fun workshop called Business Networking Pickup Lines. I'll be in San Diego on Wednesday, and Thursday I will be in Los Angeles. And this event is free. It's all for people who want to learn about using humor in sales. And my workshop will teach you the art of business flirting.
So not flirting for personal reasons, but flirting for business reasons.
Here's the analogy specifically is when we talk about flirting in a romantic sense, it is about, and one definition I heard that I like is about making someone else feel physically attractive. That is sort of romantic flirting. Well, what if you were to take that into a business concept? How do I make you feel professionally attractive?
Very interesting.
And so that's exactly what we teach.
Check that out as well. Thanks to all our patrons who support the show at patreon.com/DTNS. I've been mentioning that we've got some bonuses now. Once a week, I do an editor's desk audio monologue, 15 minutes or so, about how I go about choosing the stories we talk about on the show. That's at the $5 level. And we got this email from Chris who said, I finally increased my contribution starting in December from $2 to $5. A few weeks back, I was in the Starbucks drive-thru, and while I don't buy Starbucks more than a few times a week, I was thinking how I'd be willing to buy you a cup of coffee just to have a chance to talk tech. So now, each month, one of you can buy an extra cup of coffee.
All right.
Yeah. Be like Chris, folks. Buy us a cup of coffee. patreon.com/DTNS.
Oh, thanks, Chris. And thanks, everybody who gives us feedback. You make our show better every day. Keep it up. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern. And after the time change, at least in parts of the world, 21:30 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Patrick Beja. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.